Hello everybody, and welcome to episode 71 of Competitive Magic with the Carnies. I'm your host from Italy, Andrea Mengucci, and joining me today we have the full Carnies United. From Spain, Javier Dominguez.
Hello everyone.
And from Australia, Anthony Lee.
Hola.
Okay, it was quite some time since the last episode of the three of us together, but of course the Pro Tour happened, Pro Tour Chicago. Congratulations to Seth Manfield for winning his third Pro Tour. That's a great achievement. And and let's talk about what happened to the Carnies, because we also had a fantastic time over there in Chicago. Again, of course, congratulations to the member of the podcast, Javier, who qualified to Worlds with his 12-4 record. Unfortunately, not good enough for the top eight, but nonetheless, a fantastic performance. So, congrats, Javier. Congratulations to you.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I was going to say, at least you didn't say, like, congratulations and condolences, you know? But Anthony had to say.
People love saying that.
I know. I mean, obviously, like, it kind of sucks to be ninth, especially, like, when you're the only one on making it with X4 or whatever, but I mean, as days go by, I mean, I know already the deal, right? I have some nines already. So when you make a nine, it sucks in the moment. But, you know, every day after it's like just fine.
What were the other two nines at a PT you have?
I think it was Battle for Zendikar and Kyoto Arrow Station.
That's right. Yeah.
The Pretoria starting approves. I mean, I have three nines, I think, which is a lot of nines, but it is what it is. I mean, it was a good tournament, obviously, for me, like, but it always feels like a little bit mad to have a lucky weekend and still not be able to convert into, like, a good result. But, I mean, after all, it's been a week already, right? And I feel better about it just because it means I keep being somewhat consistent, or relatively speaking, at least. Not as much as Simon, you will say, but who happens to top eight every tournament. But I think I'm being pretty consistent, so that probably helps. Like, it's different to go, like, you know, top eight, good result, top nine, then go, like, bust, and the only weekend you have, like, in your whole life, it's ninth place, right? Which was, like, the other times. So, definitely from a privileged position or whatever, where I have some top eights before, it definitely helps, you know? Like, nine doesn't feel as bad as it did any of the other times. This was, like, an okay nine, if you know what I mean? Like, it's the condolences part should be small compared to the congratulations, because I also made Worlds. Actually, the first thing I said was to Anthony was like, well, you're not getting rid of me for Worlds yet. And yeah, is it true?
It's and very true. I mean, yes.
Yeah. So, because
also, I feel like the ninth that you got is, like, as you said, less bitter, also because you won. Like, how many of your last matches did you win? Like, three last matches?
I think I went 5-0 on day two in Pioneer. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so let's say that, you know, obviously, it sucks to get ninth, but when you win your five last match, it lets of a sting then, let's say, like, you win your last match and you get ninth, you know, stuff like that.
I don't think that makes much of a difference, honestly. Like, if you don't have any top eight and you get nine, it's going to hard. Like, for me, I don't think it's a big difference. I don't think it, I think that's a different thing for most tournaments, but I think for a PT, if you have not top eight or whatever, I think it doesn't matter much. Like, I don't even remember how did I do in the last rounds of those tournaments. I mean, if I specifically try to remember, I will remember, but, like, it's not like, you know, 1 year after, you don't even remember those things that much anyway. But I know what you're saying. Like, you end XO, you're like, wow, you know, it's good, but
It's funny because a lot of people they asked me if Javier knew that he didn't top eight because he was so happy after he knowingly became ninth, right? Which is that shows, like, he really didn't mind that much. You know, I mean, obviously he would have preferred to top eight, but the big thing for him was that for those who don't, I mean, most people didn't know that if you have a 12-4 record, you always qualify for the World Championship regardless of whether you finish in the top eight. So Javier was celebrating that he had guaranteed Worlds, and people thought he was celebrating that he made top eight when he, you know, probably didn't, and they didn't realize he didn't know that he did know. So, you know, that's something.
I mean, it's kind of like, obviously, being in nine, yeah. Yeah, you can choose, right, at some point. Yeah. Like, I mean, I could choose to be sad about ninth or choose to be happy about Worlds. And I'm lucky enough that I could choose there, you know? Like, sometimes things in life just come, like, with a bad thing. But if you have a bad thing and a good thing, I mean, it's just, like, a personal thing. Right? I just try to focus on what I got. And obviously, I mean, I think getting Worlds actually a big deal-ish.
It is.
I mean, Anthony always says, I might get it there any points anyway, but I might not. And also, it just gives me, like, a lot of, like, you know, like, space to actually...
Security.
I can do your medium year and still, it's like winning NRC, actually, in that regard, right? Where you can just lock Worlds and that's pretty good. So, I mean, it's probably better because of the match points. I don't exactly know how it works, but definitely 12-4, I assume, will have, like, a decent amount of points going forward for qualifying the next PTs, like, the next year, first PT or whatever, so...
Yes, it does. You have to day two one of the next two.
Like, I don't exactly, I don't really know that much how the system works because I made top in the second one, so I never look at it and I have not looked at it yet. But I assume if I make day two or something in the next ones, I should be qualified for the next first PT anyway next year. So I think it was a result worth celebrating. Like, you know, having half qualify for next year PT and Worlds qualify, it's good. Obviously, it's on the top eight because, you know, you play a PT, you want to make a top eight. But definitely, I will take this before. Obviously, like 2-4 is a bit lucky, but also, you know, like I think it's worth. Yeah, I just choose to celebrate because I think it's worth celebrating.
You're chilling.
Okay, the rest of the top eight is a really nice top eight with a lot of really good name. We have, of course, the winner Seth Manfield, who defeated Simon Nielsen in the final 3-1 with his. Rakdos Vampire deck that the Team Channel Fireball came up with. Simon Nielsen also on a fantastic run. This was his fourth top eight of a professional event in a row, which is, according to BDM, it's a record.
Yeah, it is.
Nobody has ever done it before. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Great congratulations from the Carnies to Simon Nielsen, the player of the year. Also, did you guys know about the thing that happened during the Pro Tour Lounge? That they gave a trophy to Simon, and like, did you guys know about it?
Well, we were there. We actually I don't know how we knew, but all I knew was like we had to stay there to see it. Like we had to stay there because we wanted to see it. But that's why we went late to dinner. So it was worth staying though. But once it was over, we just left.
It was strange, though, because, like, you know, basically they handed Simon the Player of the Year trophy with a little bit of a speech, but it was really nice. I had the pleasure of being in first front kind of casually, and yeah.
Just, like, Simon is so much good vibes. Like,
yeah,
it's,
for sure.
Like, I don't have to say it better. I'm sure Anthony will make it more accurate, but it's, like, he's such good vibes that sometimes listening to him to talk about stuff gives you joy. You know what I mean? Like, you're just there, chilling, waiting for the announcement or whatever, and he starts talking, and it's like, wow, you know, this is so emotional or whatever. Like, I get these vibes out of him a lot of times, and I think that's very good.
I think that's accurate, yeah. Simon, like, good vibes is literally just Simon. He's just always so cheerful all the time. Very wholesome.
Yeah, cheerful. Cheerful is the word I was using, I think. Yeah, thank you.
And also, another person that I would say is good vibes of the time is Christopher Larsen, who also top-hated the Pro Tour. Congratulations to Christopher, another fellow Danish player. We have also Sam Pardy, Alec Fredriksen, Adam Edelson, Jean-Noël de Prat, world champion in the fourth place, Seth Simon, Christopher Larsen, and Mingyang Chen. So quite a nice top 8 there, but also quite a nice top 16. I mean, the PT now is just, it's really cool. It's really cool to see all these players again, and this tournament was no exception for sure.
This is real stacked, huh? Look at this. Like, look at how many world champions are that you're looking at right now. You've got JD, Seth, Javier, and Yuta all in the same.
That's four.
What? Wow.
That's four in top 16. Well, apparently, if you win Worlds, you are more likely to top 16 in the next PTs. That would be the conclusion,
that does
right?
seem
the
like
conclusion you can possibly make.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about the format, the Pioneer format. You guys both came up with Is It Phoenix, although your team was a little bit split. Some other players were on Amalia combo. Yeah, I just want to ask you to tell the listeners, what did you think about Pioneer? What was your testing process? why did you choose this is a Phoenix list that I'm gonna show. Of course, if you're watching on YouTube, we have the camera. I have the camera on and I screen share things I talk about. So for example, we have the list: Javier Dominguez, Planeswalkers 2, Ashiok Dream Render. Tell us a little bit more about this.
Well, it's the same story as always. Anthony suggested something weird. We tried and it was good.
Oh, yeah. This one was actually pretty funny because I remember Javier was just sitting on his bed and he says, can we find a main deck card that would make us better against Phoenix and Lotus? And I said, what about Ashiok? And and he thought about it. And I said, I'm serious, by the way, because, you know, that's always a good sign.
Good clarification.
I have to say, by the way, I'm not joking. I'm serious about this. And I say, I'm serious, by the way. And he just snaps, I know. And I'm thinking. We ended up, we did try it. It was very good. The big thing about Ashiok specifically is that it's both proactive and a hate card. So we're not really just main decking a hate card. The Ashiok, even if its first ability has no relevance, is actually kind of, well, it's a functional card. I'm not going to say it's fantastic, but the ability to mill yourself potentially for 8 cards just if you untap with it is pretty strong. And it doubling up when you have Temporal Trespass, for example, can be quite critical and going off. Like, it makes your trespass much, much better. So, yeah, the ability to get a big edge in the mirror and against a West matchup in Lotus, which were two matchups that we felt very important, made the Ashiok very appealing, I think, along with having a reasonably high floor. And honestly, like, were we going to play, like, Pieces of the Puzzle or some other unplayable thing like that instead? No. So, the opportunity cost wasn't as high.
Yeah, so one thing that people may not know is that Ashiok ability is interesting because even if you mill yourself, your opponent is still going to exile their own graveyard. So I'm going to say that in the mirror match, it's super key to just resolve this, mill yourself for 4, exile their graveyard. And, you know, even if Ashiok dies, it already did a decent job there. And of course, stopping Emergent Ultimatum, it's the biggest deal. Remember testing against this card with Lotus post sideboard, and it was very, very good. And
it's even better game one.
Yeah, that's the thing. The card is like a much better card game one, right? Because if you consider, like, you know, for example, like even in the Phoenix matchup, the two good things you have going on are like Phoenix and Cruz, and Ashiok shuts off both. Like post board, Ashiok does tend to be like a little bit weaker. There are answers to Ashiok post board. Obviously, there are cards like Mystical Dispute or Spell Pierce running around, and there are like ways around Ashiok. But in game one, there's like not really that much you can do about Ashiok realistically. So you end up having a very large edge in game one. And, you know, classic Phoenix, when you add like one or two of a card to your deck and you have so many cantrips, you see that card very often and it's very impactful. So, yeah, it felt like a real edge to be advantage, even just in game one.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely felt like this time the deck carried quite a bit. Like, compared to last year Pioneer, where the deck was very medium, and I did this only mostly because I needed a deck well and run very hard or whatever. Obviously, I got lucky this time also to go 8-2. For sure, but like, I felt like, wow, this deck is good. I was just playing like, this works. Like everything is working as we planned, kind of, you know? And that was a good feeling, to be fair.
I think our team did Ashiok, a very good job, yeah.
Also against decks like Amalia combo, stopping Return to the Ranks on turn 5 or 6.
And Court of Calling. Court of Calling also. Yeah, like there,
oh, yeah.
It does sure. way more Call than if, like, I even, like, you can exile, like, Memory of the Luge. Like, it does more than the, like, the first eye, you know, sees. Like, there's a lot of small interactions for this card in the format.
Also, just milling yourself for so much turns on all your cruises, so your picklock prankster can always pick up crews without having to worry about graveyard. And, yeah, definitely a very good hit. And I'm not surprised if
it's also like their deck is organically very well prepared to actually protect both smokers. If you think about it, like, it has removals and blockers. So even if you need to protect Ashiok, you can just go, like, you know, turn 2, free the fight, turn 3, removal, prankster, and they're not going to kill it. Like it's very... Like, the deck is often positioned in a way where you can just untap with Ashiok. And if you do that, you know, sometimes it can just generate so much value. Like, if you mill 3 times or whatever, that's a lot. You know, you get an iteration on some Phoenixes or even, as Anthony said, like... And we remember testing some turns where, like, you will go... Cruise into Trespass because you mill so much with Ashiok, and that's a super, or Cruise into Cruise or whatever, and that's super powerful. Yeah. So definitely a big difference. Sure. Obviously, the cost is there also, right? Like, it's a clunky-ish card, but it was good for me.
Yeah, for example, when I was playing Arrakis Vampires, my opponent played this on turn. I don't remember what it was, but, and it wasn't that impactful, but I guess that's a card you side up against Arrakis.
Yeah, that's the biggest.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I well suspected Arrakis to be very bad in the tournament. We didn't know about the Vampires.
Let's go to the natural follow-up, which is the article from Frank Carson that analyzes how the decks did in the tournament. It's always some really nice thing to look after the event, right? And Izzet Phoenix had a fantastic win rate. It was the most popular deck, and it had a 57.5 win rate, knowing, like, everyone knew that Izzet Phoenix would be the most popular deck, and yet it performed so well. This is, you know, kind of speaks for itself, right? Like, it's clearly the best deck in Pioneer.
Well, it was clearly the best deck. I think it is probably the best deck. I don't know about clearly the best deck. I mean, there's just a new variable that we have to account for. We have to see whether Rakdos Vampires could contend for that. But, yeah, I mean, I think I think Phoenix. If I had to guess a best deck, I would say Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we played it, right? Well, conclusion, we played Phoenix just because we thought it was the best deck. Like, not because of medic imposition or whatever. It was more like a situation
kind
of,
it's kind of the opposite, power, right? Yeah, exactly. Like, it's specifically not well positioned.
This deck is too good.
Yeah.
It's bad, a battle position, but the deck is too good not to play for this tournament, so we're just like going to play it. But
a lot of it was comfort as well, to be fair. Like, I do think a lot of it was that we felt very good about, like, how we could play Phoenix. We thought that, you know, we had the right people to play Phoenix. Like, you, me, Nathan, Isaac.
I'm going to admit it was not that confident. On the inside, because I didn't play as much. I know you were, but I was not as much, especially after I kept losing to everyone in testing. But yeah, after the tournament, it worked well. So, like, I almost played Lotus Mango. Did you know this? I was close.
Oh, this is good actually. Like, for the first time ever, maybe me and Javier were gonna play different decks. It was kind of scary, you know. The whole process of choosing Phoenix was kind of shaky. You know, I mean,
for me, it was kind of obvious that Javier would have played Phoenix because, of course, Javier is a very well-known Phoenix player with PT Top 8 in London, in Modern. And I was like, in testing, Phoenix was just so much better than anything. Even, you know, I was going to play Lotus, and then I kept just losing to Phoenix post-sideboard that I decided to switch. And just, it was a little bit too late for me to learn Phoenix. But yeah, for me it was just so clear that Phoenix would have been your deck of choice. I'm surprised to hear that you were going to play Lotus. What was the reason?
Well, it was like literally the opposite. Like, we were like, it was very unclear to us whether Phoenix was the best to begin with. Like, at the end, after we found Ashiok, then we were more sure about it, but before, it was really close between that and Lotus. And yeah, Javier kind of, he had to be dragged a little bit until the Ashiok, I think. Like, he was maybe wavering before. Start...
It was hard.
Should we just go to the start? I actually think this is kind of interesting. All right. So,
yeah, let's go.
Our front runner when we first got to the PT testing house was actually Incarnation. Can you believe that, Mango? That we were all very close to... all of us were tentatively locked on playing Incarnation. Okay? Like, it was a new version of
Incarnation. I tested it a bit. I did not like it.
But we had a new version that was a very, very large improvement. All right. I won't go into the details there because it's a lot. But we had a version of Incarnation. We all tentatively locked. But there was a big problem where it wasn't really playable in paper because the deck was just so slow. And the first day, and we were like, okay, we have to figure this out once we get to the house, try it in paper. So I played the deck, and, you know, I was able to play it fast enough, but only by sacrificing so much accuracy that I was just playing it absolutely horrendously. Like, I was like, is this fast enough? And Javier's like, yeah, that's fast enough. I'm like, okay, that's no good then, because I was playing horribly.
That was funny.
that's no good. And I was like, all right, I'm off it. And then when Javier played, he said, this is a concern. And if anyone knows how fast Javier plays, if Javier plays a deck and he's like, I think the clock might be a concern for me, that's doomed. So that was
in my defense, then I played against Nate. We played like 15 games, and it was average 8 minutes.
Yeah, but
the
first, like,
two games were very long.
Yeah, two of the fastest players, you know, on the Pro Tour, and then we also realized the deck just wasn't quite as robust as we had thought it was. When the Pioneer metagame began to open up, so we were off Incarnation, and that left us in a bit of a spiral, you know. So what happened there was that we started to split, which was, you know, me and Javier have played the same deck for I don't know how many years. It's a lot of years, and I don't think we've ever once considered actually splitting on what we played, right?
Well, you pretended to be close to play outers, but I knew you.
I mean, that was coping. You know, I was always gonna return to the great House of Rakdos mid range, but here we were like legitimately very conscious of maybe playing different decks. So
I think that makes sense though, because Anthony and I actually have some similar strength playing, but the one of the biggest differences is I have a lot of combo background from Legacy, and Lotus actually runs into this. I think that was a difference, right?
Was a difference. Like, Javier was just so much more comfortable playing combo, and he also thought the Lotus deck was better. So Javier was very close to playing Lotus, and I was going to play Phoenix because my assumption was that if Incarnation didn't work, I would play Phoenix no matter what. So that was that. And it was very tough because the Lotus deck with Archmage's Charm we thought might actually be broken, and it was really, really unclear. And after playing some sets, it seemed like it might be. So I think at that point, Nathan was very likely to play Lotus. I think you can agree with that, Javier. Like,
I blame Nathan. I mean, I want to play Lotus because I just couldn't beat Nathan. Like, I mean, that's a classic testing process where you cannot beat Nathan. So it actually happens often. But this time it was like, wow, I really cannot beat Nathan.
And Javier was losing it. Like, he was like, oh my God, I think we have to try Nathan, to learn Lotus.
And Nathan said, I mean, Nathan actually thought we should play Lotus, right, as well.
He
like,
did.
He said, like, when Lotus is maybe a little bit too good, that's why I'm playing it. And I think you guys should actually learn. So he was strongly believing that Lotus was good enough, right? So
he was thinking it was that good. Out of the people who were like, you know, who locked Phoenix first, so Nathan was definitely Lotus, Tabi was probably Lotus, I was probably not Lotus, and Isaac was like definitely not Lotus, basically. He was just locked on Phoenix because he knew that deck so much better and had to catch up on draft. So with all of us divided, I asked Paulo for help, you know, the elite spellbinder, because he's ancient and has a lot of ancient wisdom. And he asked me a lot of questions, which made me realize whether I should play Lotus or not. And I ended up deciding not. They were really good questions, honestly. Like, you know, I asked him a lot of questions about the value of how much better does Lotus have to be than Phoenix to justify playing Lotus when I don't really know it that well and when I have to learn it. And for example, he pointed out that, you know, it would detract from a lot of other things if I had to spend all my resources into learning Lotus now, for example. So how much better is it really? I said, well, would it be substantially better than Phoenix? Is that like good enough? And he's like, I'm like, does it have to be broken? Like, is it enough if the deck is just substantially better than the second best deck? And he said, well, I mean, if you think the best deck is substantially better than the second best deck, that's the same thing as broken. Do you think that's true? I was like, it's a good question. So I just went around to all the other teammates in the house who were going to play Lotus and asked them, do you think this deck is substantially better than Phoenix? And none of them said yes. So I was like, well, okay, that probably means they don't think the deck is broken then. Because, I mean, framing it that way was easier. Because if you ask someone to tell you, is your deck broken? Most people are going to say no, right? Like, it's just a big ask. But if you just frame it as, do you think this deck is substantially better than whatever the second best deck is, it was a lot easier to get an accurate answer. So after I decided that the deck wasn't broken, and after weighing up a bunch of other factors, I ended up deciding not to play Lotus, and then started
You also convinced him in the process.
And
I was like, being like, oh shit, I mean, he's actually on point, right? So that's probably like, it's gonna be my case too.
Yeah, it was tough. It was very, very hard. But in the end, we ended up deciding to play Phoenix, and then from there, we started working on it, and that's what we found the Ashiok after we'd kind of tentatively locked it in. I think Javier might have been like, had a small chance of exiting, but
no, I was locked. Like Monday morning, locked? I was locked in Phoenix. Yeah, like, I was locked.
I could feel your doubt.
No, because I don't like to switch votes. Like, I think having one or two, having 2 days to prepare the deck actually makes a difference. Like, yeah, 2 days could be the difference between Ashiok and not Ashiok, right? So
it was. Yeah,
that was. I'm also playing the matchups. I don't know. For me, I was like, if this call is wrong and Lotus was a better deck to play, that's fine, because at least I'm going to use these 2 days to make Phoenix better or learn how to play the deck better, so I can actually, you know, make that gap smaller anyway. So, Ashok happened. That was a good timing. I mean, we eventually convinced Nate back. Also, that was funny because he convinced me to play Lotus or whatever. At the end of the day, he was like, well, do you think this is like actually like too good not to play? And I was like, yeah, let me think about it. But after an hour, I was like, yep, yeah, so you should definitely play the Ashen with Phoenix.
And then somehow, literally, five other people on the team convert, which is somewhat unprecedented, honestly. That was very strange. Like, it just started with two, then three, then four, then nine. And I was like, what? What's going on? There's just so many Phoenix players in the end. But yeah,
Yeah, but those players also didn't have like a home. Like
I think
visually no one like jumped from Amalia to Phoenix, right? It was players that didn't know what to play, so they were obviously going to default to the deck that most people will play, or the one that's more intuitive to play, which I think in this case, I mean, definitely not Heroic or Amalia. So like Phoenix is hard, but it's normal Magic, so it's hard to some extent. Yeah. Especially with player formats or Modern or Legacy or whatever, it's more intuitive than playing like Heroic, where
that is well, a weird deck. You know? That is a weird deck. If you watch Simon play, it's a lot harder than you. I mean, a lot of people, like at the basic level, you're like, oh, you just play your dudes and then put tricks on them or whatever, and then you win. That's a very basic idea. And then as you get to know the deck a bit better, you realize that, you know, it's actually pretty hard. But then you watch Simon play, especially in testing, you're like, okay, that deck is just. Even if you're like a pro player, you're like, oh, I'm not gonna. This is too hard. To pick up in a few days.
Yeah, it's also like a it's not that, like, I don't think the deck is actually that hard. It's just like the difficulty is very different from other decks.
That's more accurate for sure. Like, yeah, if you knew the tricks, you could probably do it, but it's just so hard to figure that stuff out yourself.
Exactly. Like, if you have someone that actually tells you how to play these decks, I actually think they're kind of easy, but you need to have that player. Otherwise, you have to figure out everything by yourself, and good luck.
Credit to Nate, by the way, when he wanted us to play Lotus, he literally said, I will give you 4 hours of coaching on Lotus if it will help catch you up. And that was
absolutely. He definitely offer all this help. And that I mean, having someone like Nate just being willing to teach you the lines of a deck like this definitely, you know, makes it like a more reasonable option. I mean, I'm very grateful for that. But at the end of the day, we tricked him into playing Phoenix.
But yeah, that was how we ended up picking up. It was a lot, like, from the outside, it probably looked like we just locked Phoenix from the start. But no, it was actually quite a circuitous route. And for a moment, maybe me and Javier would have split. But we didn't, though, so that's nice. We can save that. We'll split sometime, I'm sure, but not today.
Yeah, next time we build a broken combo deck and you, you know, run away. I mean, you played Tron, so, you know, I don't know anymore.
maybe we are locked forever.
Yeah. So yeah, Mengu, definitely not locked in. I mean, I actually never was a big fan of Phoenix in Pioneer overall, but definitely not like, I mean, like last year I was like, I'm just going to play Rakdos since the beginning. Like, I was hard locked on Rakdos all the time and never blinked about it, kind of. Well, this was not the case. Like, it was like the actual opposite. It was more like, well, I think I can play this deck well. But I mean, for real, I was not very confident because I also just kept losing the matchups. Like, I will just play matchups in the house, and I will only win the mirror matches. Like, I will play against Control, lose a lot. Play against Amalia, lose. Play against, like, you know, Lotus, obviously lose as well. Like, definitely, let's say it was not on my highest confident moment, but Anthony gave me a small speech. Yeah, he gave me a small speech, so it was good.
Yeah, I mean, I actually learned, like,
I would say my experience with Phoenix was mostly playing against it a lot, and the deck just had very, very few flaws. Like, again, I felt like it was winning every matchup. Maybe Lotus was the only struggle one, but it was like so much better post sideboard that, again, I went in a testing house. So I went to Chicago a couple of days before the testing house to test some more Pioneer, because I actually didn't have that much time at home to practice Pioneer. I went with the idea to try to play Lotus Field at the Energy Series to see how the deck works and, you know, how it performs in paper, because I've never played it in paper before. And it was very fun. I ended up ninth with the version with the Archery Charm, which was the first time for me playing the card this weekend, and it was really good. So I went to the testing house thinking, okay, I'm gonna be playing Lotus. But then, when I arrived to the testing house, there was Willy Edel with his Rakdos deck, which gave me the most severe beats I've ever received. We did several testing sessions where I didn't win a match, like actual XO. And it didn't even feel like that. I didn't think it was that bad, but I guess Willy just, I don't know, he always, like, I guess, mulliganed to the good hands.
Brazilian master.
And, Yeah, and just always beat me. So I was like, okay, so Rakdos is a bad matchup. And according to, yeah. And then we played against Phoenix boss sideboard, and also it was tough. And then, you know, it's a deck that I honestly expected Lotus Field to be super popular. I thought it would be the second most popular deck, because mostly because I just didn't expect Rakdos and Control to be playable. Like in testing, I felt like both Rakdos and Blue Eye Control were terrible decks, and I'm surprised that so many people showed up with them. But, you know, still, Blue Eye Control and Rakdos are super popular, so Lotus Field was just the fourth most popular deck. But I ended up switching off of Lotus and picking up Amalia, which I thought was... Oh, and another reason for switching off of Lotus was the rise of aggro decks. So Boros Heroic won both challenges by Hamuda, and a lot of players in my testing group started trying the Boros Prowess deck, right? And another deck was a very bad matchup, and that was kind of on the rise, was Izzetan Soul. So you had all these like decks that weren't so popular before and just became popular the very first weekend before the PT, which kind of scared me as well. So I decided to up off the Lotus Field. I thought that Amalia was actually decent metagame because he was beating up on these aggro decks. He was okay against almost every other deck except Blue Eye Control, which again, I didn't expect to be super popular. Unfortunately, my Amalia list sucked. I didn't have anybody to brainstorm with, and I ended up doing poorly with the deck. But Amalia, I think, was a very good choice if I had a decent list to play.
Well, what but, you said about...
Yeah, I think the best... Go yeah, on. Sorry, I just finished. I just say that the best choice remains is at Phoenix. And to me, from like a lot of my teammates tested Mirror Match of Izzet Phoenix very long because they expected the same. And it was like this. I think Izzet Phoenix was definitely the deck that comes out of the PT as the best one. You can say Rakdos Vampires, it also did well, but it still did like poorly against Phoenix. I mean, it went like 50-50 against Phoenix, which, you know, isn't the best place to be, but yeah.
I mean, the thing with Vampires is it was Team China Fireball only, where Phoenix was like every kind of player, so definitely the Vampires, I mean, if, you know what I mean, right? Like, if Handshake plays a deck that only Handshakes play, the window's going to be high, right? And so it's China Fireball deck only, so it's going
to
be like...
Yeah, that's what I was trying to push back against. Like, I don't know. I thought the same
60% win rate. I didn't say like they had the 60% win rate. I just said it did fine overall, but it's just 50-50 against Phoenix. So
yeah, but so I'm saying is 60% if it's only Team China Fireball is not.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's actually less impressive than 57.5 or like a gazillion players in terms of like how powerful the deck is.
It's honestly insane that the most popular deck that everybody thought it was the most popular beforehand got a 57 win percentage at the PT.
That's actually not common. Usually decks...
Like, this is better than Ogak. Better than Ogak.
Oh, well, I guess. But
we don't use this word. We don't like to use this word here.
Yeah.
We
can
use...
No, I said percentages. I said, win percentages wise, it did better than Ogak.
Sure, but I mean, I still wouldn't frame it that way, that seems...
it's different because, I don't think it applies, actually.
I mean, I understand that the literal numbers are like that, but I wouldn't present those numbers specifically because I think that implies something that...
didn't happen here.
Yeah.
Nice try, though.
Yeah. I think what you say made sense, though, maybe. Wait. Like, what you were talking about in terms of the metagame. Like, all of that really checks out, and I think it was... I think it makes a lot of sense to me, like, why you ended up playing.
Yeah, Lotus Field had a very bad time. It was, again, the fourth most popular deck and had a 46 win rate. Both my teammates, who did very well with at the PT, Adrian Inigo-Tastet and Sean Godhard, they finished 13th and 19th, actually went 5-1 in limited and 5-5 with Lotus Field. In fact, Adrian went 6-4. Adrian was very, very close to, I guess also Sean went 6-4, never mind. That's better than 5-5.
Yeah, it's not.
Anyway, what I wanted to say is that congratulations to Adrian, who on his very first Pro Tour started the Pro Tour 9-1, actually super close to top 8, then losing a bunch of them at the end, finishing in 13th place. But, you know, first Pro Tour, it's just fantastic. So a very, very nice guy from Spain, 23 years old, definitely a lot of hope for the future a professional Magic, so I wish him the best.
The future great of Spain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's all those good, solid Spanish young players. I'm actually very glad to see them around. You know, let's see if the new generation can actually...
Another very young Spanish player, Gabriel Soto, lost the final of the PTQ on the Sunday.
Yeah, I personally enjoy just seeing, you know, these young players just putting the results there. It's kind of refreshing in a way, you know?
Same.
Well, one thing I wanted to point about Pioneer is we have talked a lot in this podcast last year about how shitty Pioneer was. The games were actually pretty good, right? Like, that's something that changed from, like, some other situations. Like, I felt like the games were actually very interesting compared to... I think Pioneer got better in the last months. Like, it was definitely better than the last time I played the very least.
No, it's legitimately very fun. We enjoyed. I mean, we had a lot to analyze in all of the games, and the games themselves were just enjoyable, especially in the tournament to play. Like, they were high tension and they were tough. They're, you know, technically difficult. Like, that's what you want out of a pro tour, right?
Yeah, no, and also I think that's part. Like, I think Phoenix is actually a very good best deck. Like, because I don't know, take Rakdos versus Phoenix, right, or Phoenix versus Blue Eye Control, or even Phoenix versus Amalia. They're actually extremely technical and in very different ways. Like, yes, you have to play all these matchups very well, and you have to play them very differently. And they're often very modal, in the sense, like, playing Rakdos against Phoenix, every player can have all the roles. Same with Amalia. Like, it's... I don't know. I just felt like the games were actually very good quality, for my leg, at least.
Oh, fantastic.
And, yeah, I mean, I just wanted to shout, like, to say, like, well, I have said here, I thought Pioneer was a worse format by a lot, because I'm pretty sure I pronounced these words last summer. I think Pioneer is a very good format to play right now, like, for fun or whatever. And yep, I will definitely play this format for fun. And yeah, I mean, I just want to point this out just to, you know, to be a little bit mango.
I'll still take a hater route here. I am still think that Pioneer is the worst constructed format.
We all
is it Phoenix? I think it's just too good. And Lotus Field is not very fun, very hard to interact with. I played a lot of Lotus Field, and so many of my games was just, I don't know, we do our thing, who is the faster wins, and that's just terrible gameplay. So again, I'll still take the hater route, but I'm happy that you guys found it more.
We all know that there's that one hater on this podcast, and it's Mengu for sure. So
yeah, Mengu's always hitting the format. Mengu's always hitting the format. Yeah, exactly.
He's just a hater, so.
Yeah, I mean,
we don't listen to the haters, Mengu. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we don't. We don't take that hate. We live in the positivity. Sorry.
I love the draft.
Oh, draft was so good.
Every archetype.
Yes.
Every archetype combination felt very open. Like, you know, you didn't have to delete colors like I often do.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the draft formats are good, except New Phyrexia, whatever it's called, for some reason.
Yeah,
I mean, that one was bad. I don't know why. Like, but all the other formats, they just know how to do them good, and they keep doing different things. Like, I actually think this, like, morph with wards or removal sort of wards or whatever, was kind of smart. And they keep doing new things, because Lord of the Rings also was kind of new, but still a good form. I just think they're all good. I mean, I cannot even, like, compare exactly, but I think they're all just decent. I mean, I love how they actually make formats so... The decks are kind of stable, but also there's, you know, like, complexity, but also not too much in terms of, like, attacking or blocking or whatever. And so I think this was kind of experiment, I guess, with the word morphs or whatever, but I think it's a good, like, so one good thing about Limited is, like, you'll learn how to play it, and it's kind of with you forever, right, in a way. Like, you get the basics of Limited, and then so formats change, and you have to slightly adjust the rating of the cards. But so we had this format, and we had Murder as a common, which often is an uncommon, and it's often the best uncommon or whatever, and if it's a common, it's the best common by a lot. And we had a format that was such as Murder is not even among the best commons, right? I think that's extremely interesting. Like, I think that's something they could, maybe will, try to do a little bit more, which is, like, well, let's make Limited formats where some, not all, but, like, some small amount of the heuristics you often have do not apply as straight as they usually do, which is like removal, or, you know, removal is better than non-grade threats or whatever. And I think that's I don't know if you guys agree with this sentiment, but like, I think that was very refreshing of this format. Like, I will remember this format as the format where murder was not great, right? And that's the first thing, the first time it happens. And I think that's interesting in terms of like how, like maybe they make a format where one drops are great or whatever. I mean, I don't know if that will work, but you know, just the fact that the classic heuristics we have from Limited were not as easy to apply here, I found very interesting.
I think that's just like the fundamental strength of Magic. Like, there just aren't really fundamental, there aren't very many like fundamental truths, and the ones that we think apply often don't actually. So we have all these ideas in our mind, like in air quotes, you know, removal is good, or bolt the bird, or, you know, make them have, or there's all these like sort of things that people think are true about Magic that just often don't apply. And when they don't apply, it's a very big edge to know when that's not true, you know? So I think a big thing that's often the case for Magic or Magic formats is that most of the time, X, you know, but only most of the time. And yeah, I really, I think Wizards does a very good job of subverting expectations with these sets, especially in Limited, as you say. And I do think they lean into that. And I think they're doing so even more now because they're more willing to try bolder and different things. So like you say, like what if all the removal in the set just wasn't that good? You know, I think that was, and it was way more subtle than we realized. Like when we first looked at the disguise mechanic, we would have not, we probably didn't realize that Ward 2 was going to be that big a deal, right? But it just completely turned out.
Absolutely not.
It was, yeah, I just love this. Like there's always this discovery that Magic offers you with these formats. So yeah, I think that I agree with you. They've been doing a fantastic job. And specifically in this way where they do new things, they feel different, and there's something to learn in them every time. So
not only one card. Yeah, like even the Ravenous Rats, this like these bad Ravenous Rats in the format that actually ended being like super bad. But this card's often like solid, right? Like it's a card you're gonna have in your decks or whatever. And here it was like very bad. That's also, I'm saying like it's not only the murder, but like they're just making, like just putting cards we have played before, and now they are much worse or much better because whatever reasons. And yeah, that's great. Yeah, I agree with you. Like that's part of the magic of Magic.
Yeah.
Another example was the artifact, the 2-mana 2/1 that normally would be, that surveils one, normally would be unplayable, but here it was so important to have a 2-drop that I could trade with a morph that, you know, that one actually was often, you often needed to pick that up. Because,
True. Yeah, they want the thing, the machine. Yeah, I mean that's good. I mean, yeah, just good job on the format.
Sure, super super fun. Did you guys play the Arena Open last weekend?
I did. Anthony did?
No, I didn't.
Well, I did.
I
opened 2 codes to hide and seek, whatever called.
I didn't play inside.
Day one. Yeah. So I opened 2 and 2 and I proceed to go to get 7 wins with those cards. And day 2, I drafted a blue red cloak deck again. So I got 4-0. And then I went 2-2 in the last one. I actually was very close to actually win some of the matches, but I just decided to mana screw it. But it was fun.
Not win anything?
It was 3-2 or 2-2, I don't remember. It was $500. So,
oh, 500? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
good. Yeah. Good for some, you know, some burger expeditions. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, I usually don't play them, and when I play them, I usually don't do well. So it's definitely better than my average lately. But I mean, I think the opens are just fun, and limited formats are good, so the games are often good. And specifically playing the format you have tested for the PT.
It's nice. Like
it's like the biggest edge you can probably get in a tournament arena, right? Where the format is somewhat new, it's 3 weeks or whatever, and you have played for a PT. So you actually have analyzed and thought about it a lot. And it's an open tournament, so obviously the average level is not super high. Yeah, so definitely. If I'm at home, I'll try to play them, but not too hard. Like I will not stop doing many things to play them, but they're also fun, you know? Just I like playing in arena. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I would have loved to play it. Unfortunately, I was not able this weekend. But
that's the thing. Like, actually, I think that's the. I mean, as I grow old, I think that's the actual great spot for tournaments like this. Like, it's a tournament that if I'm at home, I'm kind of excited to play. I'm like, wow, you know, open. That's great. But let's say I have something else. I'm going out for a weekend with my friends or whatever, and I don't feel bad about missing it. Right? That's actually wonderful. Like. I don't have this like, I don't feel tied to the tournament, like in a way, what if I miss it? You know, like let's say I was not qualified or whatever for RC. Well, I might feel that, right? Or even if there's an RC, I have to go there if I'm not qualified for the PT. But here it's like, well, if I cannot play, that's fine. But if I play, I'm excited for it. And I think that's, I mean, for me, that's a sweet spot to be.
Yeah, makes sense. We care about freedom and choice a lot, right? In our personal lives. So, and as Magic players, like, you know, in general, agency is something that we care about a lot. So, or at least we value highly, I should say. We enjoy it a lot. So the agency to choose a tournament you want to play is kind of reflective of that.
Yeah, no, but yeah, absolutely. I think that's true. But also, you're often those tournaments are like just, you know, like 8-player drafts, you know, if you can play it any time. So I think Arena is a good compromise with that. Like, it's just good in the between. Also qualifies for the Arena PTQ, which I forgot, but I remember now. So I don't have to grind the ladder. Wink.
Oh, yeah, it does. Nice. Don't have to grind ladder. Yeah, as if that wasn't good.
Exactly.
Oh, and another card that I loved was this land with this guy's Breach of Itugazi. That was super cool whenever you got to trade with a creature with a land. It was a good feeling.
Oh, I used to love the unflippable disguises, you know? Like, I would just stick a thing I couldn't ever flip, and then every time it traded, I was like, gotcha. It's fun, though. This mechanic is so fun.
I never played the actual fun. Love Call or disguise, but this is close enough color to these guys, I guess. Yeah. It's a little bit better.
Well, I think we only really did it when we had lots of the Tipster, but, you know.
Yeah. Tipster's so good.
Yeah.
Also, what was your feeling about the list card?
Yeah, like, I want to ask you about that.
From real fun.
LSV, because enlisted Worm and Magma in his Thrio deck.
I don't know if the Magma's good. That one is unclear to me. It might be good in some decks, but I wouldn't just assume that it is. I don't think it's great in most of them. I think the list cards are really interesting. Like, I don't know, they just add even more replayability to these limited formats, especially when people play them more and more and start to rely on data more and more. Being able to mix it up with these, like, very rare situations it helps a lot with replayability. So, I don't know. I think the change to play boosters was really interesting. I actually enjoy the variance that they have introduced. I think the variance comes through in an interesting way and not a frustrating one.
So the changes are really having applied, right? That's how little I notice. Like, what? This is different than March of the Machines, right?
Yes.
Because we already had a lot of random legends in March of the Machines, didn't it?
Yeah, that was a specific bonus sheet. Yeah, but there's a wider range.
Well, but I mean, there's bonus sheets every two sets or whatever. Like, in the Phyrexia, we had some Praetors or what? Like, there's always, like, random things. So now the thing is,
random
things are the same, or are they still changing as well?
No, this is how it is from now.
My problem with these...
Go on.
Yeah. With this, the least card is that, like, the cards from March of the Machine were kind of curated. They were good. Here, the least card were, I mean, most of them just, you know, did not feel like curated card, or, you know, they were, like, good enough to be put in your deck. So, you know, you already took one less card. You have 14 cards, and then sometimes you have a basic land, and then sometimes you have these, like, bad cards. I feel like, yeah, they're just taking away, I don't know, some draftable and playable cards from the packs for these. I don't know, are they fun to open? Now I don't think about it, but there's so many, like, Hysteria Mass, or just, you know, a lot of, like, random cards like that that you would see in the pack and be like, what is this doing here, you know? So I wasn't a fan of the list. I prefer the March of the Machine bonus sheet, or the Brothers War, you know, stuff like that.
Well, I don't think all of them were bad, but none of them are just bad. Like, a lot of them are, like, bad, but you actually have to try them to find out, which I think is the interesting part. Like, I think it's actually way better that the list has a wide range of playables than that the list is mostly just good cards, because then it just defines the draft format a lot, which was often the case for the Multiverse Legends in March of the Machine. Like, I actually prefer it when there's cards like that. I don't know if Magmore is good when I open it, and that's exciting to me. Like, for the most part, it's not that good. I mean, decent here, but... stuff like that, or like Mass Hysteria, for example. Like, I actually didn't know if that card was good or not when I saw it, right? And, okay, it sucks. It's horrible. You should probably never put it in your deck. But that process of discovery was way more interesting for having had that card in the set. So, I don't know. I think having bad cards in the list is actually a good thing. Which sounds weird, but I think that makes the format more interesting to figure out. It's probably worse, like, you know, at the end of the format, but... I think I care a lot more about the start of the format being fun than the end of the format, because that like you would only really know about that if you were going to play the format like a lot more than I think the average player does.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I agree. I mean, the manga criticism is actually reasonable. Like, there's also some cards that were like in between, like Ixidor, for example. You know, it was like, well, this looks interesting with the morph mechanics, you know, but then it's like just not very good. But I think there aren't that many cards that are like Mass Hysteria level of that, right?
Yeah.
Like, there are some of those, but they're very rare. Like, even, you know, Storm King Captain or whatever, like, these cards actually could be somewhat played in a way.
They're good.
And even like, the presence of something like a Death Cloud, I am not annoyed by that. Like, I think Death Cloud is like, well, it's probably bad, but what if it's like a, you know, banger in the right deck? Like, I think some of them are like kind of potentially fun. I'm not a big fan of like the Vampire 5 mana that just does nothing or whatever, but like some of the cards were... I mean, the first draft I played, my opponent played Jace, Wielder of Mysteries. I was like, what? but I still am not that annoyed by that. I think that's the right power level, if that makes sense, for my taste. Like, I don't know. I mean, if they're Glorybringers, it's going to be bad, right? But as long as they're good cards, but actually just, you know, sometimes just good, I think it's fine. I do agree that the 14 cards plus a land or whatever makes, like, the boosters a little bit too small. And, you know, like, yeah, it's just, like it's a different texture. I mean, you can ask for different things from the list, and you will form a sheet like the Brothers War, I think, where you had the Gunkal Engine, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like, I do think they accurate in that regard, for sure.
Yep. Right, Mango, you have something else to tell us?
I play Vroomcall Engine in Modern now.
What?
I'm an amulet main.
What?
Oh, when you say Vroomcall in Modern, player. I think of Tron. Like, I thought you were declaring yourself as a Tron player. I was like,
me too.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that.
I mean, we played Vroomcall Engine in the PT.
I just love to put Vroomcall Engine in my amulet sideboard. Never.
All right, we were forgetting. Yeah. We didn't tell the listeners, like, Mango, you actually qualified again. Like, you just keep qualifying to all the tournaments. Isn't it amazing? Mango, he keeps qualifying to every tournament, like, in the actual, like, somewhat last chance or whatever. Like, it's just great.
He's a cat with 9 lives, we say.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, like, 25 lives or something. I don't know.
I definitely did not plan to play Rakdos Vampires, but yeah, that was my deck of choice for the Sunday PTQ, and I got there somehow. I basically just failed with Amalia, although I knew that it would have been decent if my list was good. But I kind of was just basically, like, whenever I do bad with a deck, I never want to play that deck again.
So, we know. Mango. That's why we thought you will not play Phoenix in the PT, because you did once bad with Phoenix.
Yeah, exactly. Called it. Yeah, twice.
Yeah, go on.
So I literally hated every single Pioneer deck, and so I had to play the only one that I've never played before in my life, which was Rakdos Vampires. But, you know, playing a... Oh, so by the way, thank you to Arne Ushimbeth for lending me the deck. That was definitely needed, since it would have been hard to put the deck together, because I believe nobody had Dusk Agent Zero.
Yeah, the Scylla, that would be hard. Yeah. How was it? Like, so when I ask about this, like, you never played the deck before, but also your opponents didn't. So you actually felt like... I think you made a good choice, actually, playing this deck, what you're saying. But, like, did you feel that this effect were... Because sometimes you play a deck that's new and you don't know it, but they also don't. Do you also feel like this?
The problem is that I really didn't know it. Like, actually didn't know some of my cards, which involves me making some mistakes. The card that I didn't know the most was Aklatzotz, which has so much text, and I didn't know a lot of it. Like, for example, I didn't know that if you go Lightning Axe, discard a land, I would make a bot. And that bot, I didn't make it. That bot would have been huge, because I ended up dying to a Crackling Drake attack that I could have chum blocked and then untap with Aklatzotz and etc. So, yeah, it was a lot. But, yeah, no, for sure. My opponents also didn't know. I believe the Preacher of the Schism was another very tricky card. There was a lot of little combo with the Soaring sacrificing some vampires. Like, I believe one of my Amalia player decided to play an Amalia, which ended up dying to Soaring. There was definitely a lot of, tricky situations. I ended up winning a game against an opponent with Aetherflux Reservoir, Amalia, and White Growth Worker in play. But they just, you know, didn't draw a spell for a turn. And I ended up turning the corner.
One question, Mango, about this. I want to ask, I have questions. I have other questions. So did you feel the deck was, like, very good? Or it was, like, one of these days where you have the day and things go your way, whatever? Like, did you feel like the deck was, like, actually super strong? Or more like, you know, cards fall my way, I'll take it down.
Yeah, so this deck is supposed to be bad against Amalia. Like, Rakdos is supposed to be very bad against Amalia. But actually, I was able to beat two Amalia thanks to one of the three games I did the thing. Like, I went Soaring Veer and Reaper on turn three. And once you do that, you know, every bad matchup turns into...
At least okay.
Decent.
Yeah.
Got it.
And the Vein Reaper... Like, you can actually copy this thing with Fable. It sounds like whatever, you don't need it, but, you know,
it actually kills
you
them.
You get to, like, win the game on the spot. Yeah. You get to win the game on the spot when you.
So how does it work? You attack for, you actually kill them, right? Like 18 or 20.
Yeah, I mean, you attack for a lot, and also end of turn when the token dies, it triggers the.
So you attack for 16. So that's 16 damage and gain 4.
Sometimes I had, like, Fable flipped with a Goblin Shaman. I, like, copy the Goblin Shaman with Fable, attack, and then play cast Vein Reaper post-combat, and then the Goblin Shaman dies and triggers Vein Reaper. So
I think I will like this deck.
I mean, yeah, also, it's black-red.
another interactions I didn't know that came up was that I had Leyland of the Void in play, and my opponent creature dies, you don't trigger Vein Reaper. That's something I didn't think when I was playing. Okay. So when it came up, I was like, oh yeah, you know, that was a mistake. So it kind of sucks to make mistakes because you didn't test, but that's actually what happens when you play a deck for the first time, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's hard. Like, that's going to happen to every one of us, I guess. But at least your opponents also can make that, I think. Like, I think if the deck is new, like, it's different to pick up this deck and play it in a tournament than pick up Phoenix and play it for the first time in a tournament where your opponent will have played 100 games against it. But this time, maybe your opponents also will have never played against these cards. Like, maybe they never played against Soaring. So it's actually reasonable for them to make mistakes.
Yeah, or maybe they don't have a cyber guy that they've never played against, so they have to cyber
on the fly. They don't even know what the matchup is about.
I'm
sure they
also
got Edge. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, and... the tournament actually was had a quite a strange tournament structure. And so we were 131 people. This is the Sunday PTQ that basically it's called Second Chance PTQ. So all the PT players that aren't qualified, that weren't qualified to Seattle after the PT, were invited to this PTQ. So he had, I think...
Like, that's a lot of people, right? 131?
Yeah, the main event was 257. The PTQ was 131, so I would say that about half of the Pro Tour players requalified, and about half of the Pro Tour players played in this PTQ.
But it's a tough tournament, right, Mengu? Like, I see these PTQs when I go there, and they seem like very high-level tournaments. Like, they actually, from the outside, they feel like it's very high-level.
Yeah. This one was obviously a very much high variance because it was single elimination. So what happened was 131 players, 6 players... played round one, and 125 players got the bye. So they, like, named the 6th player on the microphone. There's kind of, like, super feel bad moment for the people named. And then the 6th player played, and then we had 128 people. And after 5 rounds, we would have 4 players. Robert Krankel, Justin Chin, Liam Kane, and me. Liam Kane, actually, is one of my teammates, super young player from Canada. Congratulations to him. And and yeah, so what happens was that you had to win I had to go 5-0. I beat Phoenix, Control, 2 Amalia, and then Boros Convoke in the final. So
that has to be a good matchup, right, for this deck, Vein Reaper.
That must be insane.
I mean, Also the Sorin life, yeah, it has to be.
The rest of the deck's not good against Convoke though, so you do have to have like.
I would say that Convoke is usually favored against vampires, but it's also like a high variance deck. So he had an amazing draw game too, where just kind of killed me on turn three or something like that. And the other two games, he was not very impressive, and Stamble, I was able to just play Rakdos mid range style. I never did the thing against him, but
yeah, sometimes you go do this push Fable and they die. I understand.
But it was honestly I had a lot of moments in this PTQ where I felt like not knowing the deck was super harmful and I was playing bad. But thankfully, I was bailed out by the
deck. I mean, you also played well, you know. Like I've seen you playing enough.
Some games. That's enough sometimes.
That's enough. I mean, we all make mistakes, you know. Like, all right, Anthony, what's the biggest mistake you made in this tournament?
You know, it's kind of doomed because I have to think about it and pick between them.
All right.
Bad question. Oh my lord! That has to be a story for another time. Surely the one from the first draft.
The one for the first draft, I don't remember, but...
Do you remember? It involves, involves a nervous gardener.
Oh, I think I do.
That's one of the greatest stories.
Let's go.
I'm such an idiot.
Did you not...
Another time.
Did you not put a basic land in your deck?
Oh, no, this is way... this is so much worse than that. No, it's actually too long. It's another time. But
right.
We have a lot of stories. Maybe we'll tell some next time, but... Oh, this one is incredible.
You shuffle your hand into your deck.
Next time, Mangu.
But don't worry, it's stupider than that.
I'm going to say mine, it's easy. I just cracked a clue against Okrenko.
Fuck.
That's not good. But fortunately, my opponent also didn't notice. So because I didn't know it would trigger Okrenko, so I was not like...
Wait. Javier, this is important. What? Would you say that you didn't have... A clue that it would trigger.
I did not have a clue. Yeah, I definitely did not have a clue. Come on, Anthony. Why? I mean, it's just like, we all make mistakes once again, and it's really hard to play. Even like, I think I played actually fairly well in this PT, but even if you play fairly well, you're going to still make mistakes. So I don't like when Mengu is rough to himself. So
yeah, no, it's fair.
There was a moment in this tournament that it was super dead. I thought it was super dead. It was game 3 against Amalia. I think it was round 3 or round 4, whatever. And I mulligan to 6 and my hand is 4 lands, 2 Fatal Push after putting a land or land on the bottom. And my first 4 draws were 4 lands. I played 2 Fatal Push and my hand was 4 lands and my battlefield was 4 lands. And that's it. And I thought, it's over. Like, I can never win. And then I draw Thoughtseize. I Thoughtseize my opponent, who's on 3 lands, 4 cards in hand. And his end is the recollected company, Knight Errant of Eos. Okay? So, as soon as he draws a land, it's over, right?
Never do it.
somehow, he like takes a while before drawing the fourth land, and I draw like Harvester into Crack Blood, play Fable on turn 6. So I drew like Harvester into Fable. And then like the game continues, and it's that one where he had the Reservoir, Amalia, and the Wagger Walker, and literally any spell kills me and he draws a land. And then just from there, I win. But it's just, and like I had to exile the Lunark Veteran earlier with the Hive of Thy Tyrant. Actually, having played Amalia helped me a lot in that match. I think if I didn't know how to play Amalia, I would have lost that match. So it's good that my Amalia treated me very poorly in the tournament, but at least saved me in the PTQ the day after by just playing against it.
No, definitely. I mean, knowing the deck definitely makes you better against it, right? Like, it's just going to happen like that.
So, sometimes there is some spot where my opponent, like, drew for turn and then looked at the graveyard, and I immediately knew they had Return to the Ranks, and then, like, later, like, Thoughtseize instead of another play, and they had Return to the Ranks. Like, things like this are, they seem a small thing, but actually you mean a lot.
Oh, be careful.
Yeah.
You might get tricked one day.
No, I know there could be a bluff situation, but it's hard. Like, you know, when you play like these, let's say high stakes, very, very tense game, it's difficult to bluff. Like, your mindset is so much on, like, playing well. One day I could. I'm just saying that let the things that happen in this tournament.
All right.
Absolutely.
Advice for listeners. Help me win. If you play against Mengu, just make sure you pick up your graveyard every 3 draw steps or so, okay? Just do that for me. Just have a squiz every 3 draw steps. Just be like.
Yeah, exactly. You need to keep the range open. You can't do it only when you draw a turn to the ranks.
My advice is going to be the opposite to the listeners. Just like, yeah. I actually had the situation where Brady and Stefan, and I don't exactly remember what happened, but he was like, well, I don't know what you will think because I thought that beat up that. I was like, listen, I just completely ignore whatever my opponent does in terms of time, where they look or whatever. I just completely ignore it. Like, because it could be them tricking me, but also it's in a situation where they choose to enable that kind of level battle, right? So while I would be like to be involved in a leveling mind battle, if they're choosing to trigger it. So my advice is just like, what I do is just completely ignore as if it never happened.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just something totally unrelated. Like, you know, it's a bit too difficult to read into that stuff, I think, and it's quite dangerous. And like, it genuinely takes some degree of mental effort, which is usually better placed elsewhere. Like, sometimes it's free, but I think it's mostly too not worth it. It's too dangerous.
But anyway, Mengu qualified again, so we're all three qualified for the PT once again. I think that's kind of cool. I know.
I mean, yeah, I can't remember which one the last one was that we thought, oh, maybe this will be the last one, and then we were just wrong like 4 times in a row or something, so.
Yeah, but you make fun of me when I say those things, but no one makes fun of you saying those things.
Well, yeah, obviously, because Xavier keeps insisting that maybe this is his last one ever, and then, you know, top 8's like 3 in a row or whatever he does.
Well, so. But this next one is not going to be my last one, presumably.
No, you'll probably still say it anyway. This
again. No, I'm not saying it anymore, but this could be the last one we're all three qualified, you know? So let's see.
Mengu's going to win another second test BDQ, 100%.
Yeah.
Go on.
And we even got a pictures of the three of us together.
Oh, so that's nice.
Thumbnails.
Taken by a very kind fan, actually. Yeah, that was really nice of
you. Yeah, we asked. So a fan of ours and a lot of people came up to ask for, of course, signatures and pictures to the three of us. A lot of people watches the carnies, listen to the carnies, and etc. And actually, one of the people asked us a picture, and in return, we asked them to take us a bunch of pictures. So
you did that, not us.
Yeah, it was you, not us. Yeah, it was all of you, Mengu, definitely.
Yeah, I did.
That was so nice. There were a lot of people that came up to us. It was really, really.
I take a lot of pictures with people. Sometimes I ask a favor back. It's totally fair.
Yeah, thanks for the pictures. They were actually cool. And now we have one together, so we don't have to be like photoshopped or anything.
Yeah, do some Photoshop, some pictures from.
We can still Photoshop each other, you know, if you miss it.
You actually weren't there.
Yeah. For all time.
That's the story. That's the story.
All right. Is this good for the week?
Shall we wrap up and say goodbye to all the listeners? Again, if you enjoyed the show, remember that you can join patreon.com/carnies to talk with us and on Discord whenever you want. And anything else, guys, you have to say?
No, actually, that, you know, it's very fun to. Pretty funny. Funny? Is it fun or funny, Anthony?
It could be both. It's fun, very fun
to actually. You always say this. All right, whatever. I am very glad to, you know, keep going with this podcast because we really enjoyed it. And it's also very, you know, like, it feels good when actually run into people that actually like the podcast. So, you know, we also like doing it. So let's see how long we can keep doing that, because it's great and I have a lot of fun.
Thank you to all of you who approached us. I really appreciate that, because I was surprised by how many people came up and said something nice. Yeah, each and every one of you. It was very nice to meet all of you. I enjoyed that a lot, and I hope to meet a lot more of you in future as well. Hope to see a lot of you again. In fact, thank you.
All right.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.